Warriors Draft Room open mic on this Wednesday, November the 4th, as we talk about great Warriors drafts from the past and memories of those drafts. We'll bring folks from offstage up to talk, and we'll kind of start things off with a man you just heard from at the beginning of our show intro, as it was 2009, a draft that we'll never forget. We'll go into greater detail about it, but this, the sounds of that night in 2009, Commissioner then David Stern heading up to the podium, and then a little bit of the analysis after the pick on the ESPN broadcast. Fun to listen back to 2009, the year that the Warriors selected Stephen Curry.
Commissioner David Stern has the card for a team that used 47 different starting lineups. Here's the commissioner. With the seventh pick in the 2009 NBA draft, the Golden State Warriors select Stephen Curry from Davidson College. I didn't realize that there were so many fans who disliked the Golden State Warriors so much. Actually, the reaction says it all. Nothing against Golden State, but these Knicks fans wanted Stephen Curry, the 6'3 junior guard out of Davidson, who quite simply is the best shooter in the draft. Jay Billis, he led the nation in scoring at 28 points per game. What makes him special?
Well, you mentioned it. He's an unbelievable shooter, and he's got great range. You know, if you cut him off at 23 feet, he'll move out to 25. If you cut him off at 25, he can take it out to 27. He's got really deep range. It goes beyond NBA range. And I think one of the things about, that you really love about him is he just knows how to play. He's not only a gifted scorer, but he knows how to get shots off. He's got a really quick release. He can stop on a dime, and he's got a great understanding of the game, and he loves to play. And that's something that I don't think can be understated. The guy that loves to play is going to be in the gym all the time, and that's the way Stephen Curry is. He's an unusually good passer. He can anticipate defensively. He's not the type of player that's a superior athlete that can stay in front of super quick players, but he uses his craftiness.
Crafty, indeed, and what a draft. We'll go through our memories. Let's bring on Will Gottlieb, longtime writer with Bleacher Report, covering the Warriors, and now doing programming with Locker Room, and joining us here on our Warriors Draft Room show. Will, when you think back to 2009, where were you, and what do you remember about that draft? Of course, Ricky Rubio and Johnny Flynn going to the Minnesota Timberwolves ahead of Stephen Curry in that draft. Knicks fans, as you heard, bemoaning the fact that it was Jordan Hill from Arizona that they would end up taking with the eighth pick because Steph came off the board there at seven. But you look back at that draft, 2009. Do you remember where you were during that 2009 draft?
Lawrence, thanks for having me on. I couldn't tell you exactly where I was during the draft, but I do remember just being really impressed with the amount of talent coming out of that draft. Obviously, Blake Griffin was number one. Hashim Thabeet was one of these guys that, you know, everybody was just intrigued by his physical tools and potential. Then you have James Harden. Ricky Rubio is like one of my favorite prospects out of Spain. Kind of somebody that people really thought was going to be, you know, a Magic Johnson type of playmaker with the flashiness. And then just talent all the way up and down. Jrue Holiday was in that draft. Patrick Beverley, I think. Danny Green. So a ton of talent. Obviously, Steph going to the Warriors was a pretty franchise-changing draft pick, and you know, some years following that, adding Klay and Draymond and down the line. But I just remember being really impressed with the amount of talent and exciting players in this draft.
Most certainly, and you think too about the draft in 2011, which we'll get to in a second. I remember 2009. I was at Leon Poe's draft night event in Oakland. And certainly just down the way at the Warriors facility, they were making this pick. But at the time I was working for NBC and we were finding the local angle, a guy that was playing at Cal and, you know, was hoping to be drafted in the first round. And that had been a great story out of Cal. He ended up going in the second round of that draft. But draft parties, certainly a theme when you have them in a public setting like that, and you're waiting, it can get kind of nerve-wracking. We've seen that in all kinds of drafts throughout the history of all kinds of sports. I mean, heck, think of another Cal player we think of that kept dropping and dropping and dropping, and now is going to be an NFL Hall of Famer in Aaron Rodgers. But that basketball draft of 2009, certainly fun to be watching at that point. And we'll talk about 2011 in a second. While we've got Will on, Will, hold tight. We want to bring Sean Coleman up because he had a question to join the program. And Sean, throw something at us here. I'm looking at your icon here for what you've got going on. You've got some Memphis players, Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. in your avatar. But we're talking Warriors drafts of the past and favorite memories therein. And anything you'd like to throw at us? What's up, Sean?
Yeah, I was just going to ask. So the 2011 draft, I'm trying to remember if that was Klay Thompson or not, but regardless, Steph and Klay were drafted right within 2 to 3 years of each other. And as you mentioned, that 2009 draft was heavily loaded, but y'all also did, draft Klay Thompson, and obviously he has turned in, you know, what's been a Hall of Fame career. At the time, though, shooting was not as well known as it is now, just the depth of just how much impact shooting and shooting consistently is. But it seemed like the Warriors certainly were ahead of the game, and obviously it turned out into being creating one of the best dynasties out there with two of the best shooters of all time in Thompson and Curry. Was there a heavy influence when it comes to the shooting potential of those two that made the Warriors go that way? I'm not saying that Monta Ellis was that great of an influence, but y'all did have him, so y'all had plenty of data when it comes to shooting. That may be a reach, but how much of a shooting influence or an influence on shooting went into those draft picks, or was it more just the overall talent that you liked in both Steph and Klay? Because it seems like that, you know, if you were preferring shooting, you hit it on the head twice, you know, historically well. So.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed almost in high school, Stephen Curry was an NBA shooter, right? And Klay Thompson's potential from beyond the arc, certainly huge. Klay's defensive capabilities certainly on display because of his frame, and just also the fact that both Stephen and Klay had fathers that played in the NBA, and they knew the business of what it is to be a productive NBA player. That certainly helps. But, you know, your question's good. If you look back, you mentioned Monta Ellis, and he was a second-round pick in 2005, I believe. But it was another guy that, you know, we kind of think of maybe more as a San Antonio Spur of recent past, but Marco Bellinelli, I mean, that was shooting drafted in the first round by the Warriors in 2007. They made a pick in 2008, the Warriors did, that was very much in line with what you're saying that the NBA was doing and taking a very athletic player out of LSU and Anthony Randolph. But by the time Steph was taken, the following year, Epe Udo, another athletic defending type player, was selected. It seemed like it was almost at that point alternating between athlete and pure shooting. But really, you know, kind of a fascinating concept to be thinking about when you look at that time period. You're right. The game hadn't changed yet because Stephen and Klay had not helped change the game quite yet. But now as we move forward, you think of the 2019 draft, a shooter like Jordan Poole is of high priority to the Warriors as a first round pick because the league now is putting such a precedent on deep outside shooting. And I'm thinking too of it was 2012 when Harrison Barnes, Festus, and Draymond were selected by the Warriors. And in that draft, it was Damian Lillard who made a big splash coming out of Weber State. And some people were like, well, I don't know this guy. And, you know, in the Bay Area, we had an inkling of him because playing from, you know, Oakland high school scene and, you know, AAU. But the story of his long range shooting, kind of an interesting trajectory that sort of compounds the years that started following with shooting being a precedent. But Sean, really, really great question. Thank you for joining us. We will keep going throughout this program with draft themes. And I mean, Sean was just talking about that 2011 draft. This a scene from 2011 that won't go quite as long as the one we had from 2009. But 2011, we can't forget it. Really a special time for the Warriors. Coming 2 years after Stephen was selected, the Warriors taking Klay Thompson.
With the 11th pick in the 2011 NBA draft, the Golden State Warriors select Klay Thompson from Washington State University. If you just had a thought, who is that older gentleman who looks a lot like him who we just hugged? It's Clay's father, Michael Thompson, who was the number one overall pick in the 1979 NBA draft. Clay will become the fifth son of a number one overall pick to play in the NBA.
Yeah, that impressive stat in its own right. And Will, you're thinking back to 2011 and Clay falling to 11. You know, that's something he played at Washington State in the Pac-10, I guess, at the time. Was it not the Pac-12 at that point yet? The Pac-10, you know, the games were on so late. Maybe the nation didn't really know about Clay Thompson, but those of us on the West Coast who follow, you know, the local college scenes certainly did know about Clay Thompson, and it just seemed like a terrific pickup coming after Jimmer Fredette, if you'll remember that, Will.
Yeah, I always wondered if Jimmer had been available to the Warriors at 11, whether they would have tried to pair him with Steph and kind of go all out on the running around and shooting threes off the dribble game. But that draft is another weird one where you have, you know, a couple of guys at the top of the draft who didn't necessarily pan out the way that I think these teams would have hoped with Derek Williams. You know, Enes Kanter has carved out a role for himself. But certainly, I think probably not as much as Utah would have hoped, taking him number three. Same thing with Tristan Thompson, a very valuable offensive rebounder. But, you know, aside from that, not kind of a franchise player that you would hope to get in the top five. Jan Vesely, Bismack Biyombo, the list goes on. So obviously the Warriors got a ton of value with Clay Thompson. And I think, you know, Sean was mentioning the, you know, value of the three-point shot. And I think this is really a time when I believe Don Nelson had moved on from the Warriors by this time, but I think his style still kind of impacted what they did in terms of playing really fast, up-tempo, shooting a lot of threes. And Clay, obviously a great two-way player, just fit the bill.
So those offstage, do us a favor. Hit us up on the discussion tab with the date of the draft that you're kind of remembering being a Warriors draft that meant something to you. This show really detailing the concept of drafts that we remember and really loved that were interesting to us, that were Warriors drafts. And, I mean, these have been a long history of some very interesting drafts. I mean, you go back deep into the past. I mean, of course, the Warriors with the number one overall pick in 95 and taking Joe Smith out of Maryland. And, you know, that draft in 95, there's four other picks they made in the second round. And, you know, there was the draft with Penny Hardaway being selected by the Warriors, I guess, 2 years before that, 93, where the pick was swapped with Orlando as Chris Webber came to the Warriors. You know, some of the picks that became Warriors that you know of as Warriors, obviously guys like Latrell Sprewell, Donald Foyle, Mike Dunleavy Jr., who's now with the Warriors basketball operations side of things. The draft that I remember most in this regard, I guess, that I would put as the topic for me in saying what I remember to be a favorite draft and a time it really hit me with all the talent that came in was 2001. Jay Rich out of Michigan State, the fifth overall pick with that first round selection. They had a second pick in the first round, Troy Murphy, who we had on one of our Warriors flashback programs recently. We caught up with him. He came out of the University of Notre Dame. These days he's living in Las Vegas working as a financial advisor and helping players with programs that help them save money and, you know, grow wealth toward the future and do things in the community. And he's doing it all like a pro bono. It's a really cool thing that Troy Murphy's doing. And we got a chance to talk with him about that. And then also in 2001, not just Jay Rich and Troy Murphy, but Gilbert Arenas out of the University of Arizona. And good gosh, think about how just rich with Arizona history the Warriors have become. Coach Kerr, Coach Q, Bruce Frazier, Andre Iguodala, et cetera, et cetera. Sasha on the discussion loving Agent Zero, and we love Agent Zero. The other one I was mentioning earlier when I was talking about Penny Hardaway and that pick being traded, Vince Carter, as Brian was pointing out, would have been an amazing thing for the Warriors to have kept in that position, but he was swapped, if you remember, for Antoine Jameson, a guy that he had played with at North Carolina. So Bailey Caldwell is saying, great minds think alike. And if it's about 2001, Bailey, I'd love to hear your take on it. And do thank you for joining us if you can here as we're bringing you up from the offstage area. And, you know, those of you that we offer the opportunity to come up from the offstage, if you're not able to do it, we completely understand. But Bailey is joining us now. And were you remembering 2001 with Jay Rich, Troy, and Agent Zero, Bailey? Or what else are you thinking about as a favorite Warriors draft of the past?
So, for me personally, that's one that sticks out to me just really as an NBA fan overall. My best friend is a diehard Warriors fan, and he's always talked about Jason Richardson and Baron Davis being that group that kind of brought him into the organization. But for me, as someone who's like a fan of the league, at least at that point in time, as being younger, was a fan of the league overall, I remember those guys as well. And, you know, I was looking back as you talked about the draft history, and I thought that was a really good draft because Troy Murphy is someone I always associate with the Warriors. I remember him being a player for you guys, and I didn't know all that he's been doing for the team. So that's really cool. And in sneaking Gilbert Arenas in with the 31st pick, even though I only spent, I think, two seasons there, you know, what he became is a good, it was a great find in that second round. And so as polarizing as his career ended up being, he was a great player. And so, you know, being the team that could say, you know, we found Gilbert Arenas, I think that's pretty cool as well. And yeah, it just, the Warriors have, in my opinion, been a great drafting team for a long time. You know, and it's kind of at a peak right now with the Steph, Clay, Draymond era. But it's nothing new from my personal opinion. I've always considered them to be a great drafting team. And looking back into the history of that, I saw that year, and it stuck out to me.
Bailey, I hear you. And I'm looking at your avatar as well, and it seems like you've got some Grizzlies fandom going as well, like our previous guest, Sean. And, you know, that's a team that has done very well in the draft over the past several years as well. And Ja Morant, certainly the headliner player, and certainly super fun to watch. And that athletic mold and his game will continue to grow. And, you know, Sasha, you were bringing in this concept here about the draft where the Warriors took Patrick McCaw out of UNLV.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that's coming in the second round after the Warriors had taken Damian Jones from Vanderbilt. But throw us your Pat McCaw memories. Super nice guy. A terrible, you know, scene the night that he hit the floor really hard. I think it was against Sacramento, if I'm remembering correctly. And, I mean, a really scary scene that, you know, is sometimes career-altering, but he got things back on track and has, you know, played with the Raptors, as you mentioned, in your, you know, note in the discussion for us to come on up. But why did 2016 stick with you?
Well, it's because of the selection of Patty McCaw that I thought 2016 was really good for them. McCaw's like a really, really good role player. And I'm really glad as a Raptors fan that he was on the team. I just think the fact that he won back-to-back-to-back championships is also like really amazing, you know, just for his career going forward, that he'll always be remembered for that. Just like, you know, James Jones is remembered as going to 7 straight NBA finals, I think it was, or maybe more with LeBron James. But like the thing for me, I'm not a Warriors fan, but like, I think the Warriors draft so well. Klay Thompson's one of my favorite players in the league. I've loved Gilbert Arenas ever since I started playing that NBA Live game where he was on the cover, and you know, Patty McCaw as well. So I've always kind of been in awe of how well they've drafted. I mean, as a Raptors fan, the Raptors have also drafted pretty well recently, but there's just been so many good role players that have come out of the first round and the second round by the Golden State Warriors.
No doubt. Sasha, thank you for joining us. And as we bring Eric up, he wanted to think back to the 2012 draft. Now, the other day when this topic started, we had two topics going that we're going to continue with today. Will and I, and maybe Howard will come back and we'll talk about athletes in technology and their roles there. So we'll get to that in just a second, because that was one of the topics with Kent Lacob, who joined us on Monday. And this coming Monday, we will have Kirk Lacob joining us to talk about draft preparations. And you know, thank you all for bearing with us on the meta theme here, that in this particular draft, coming from the organization with this show, we're really not able to talk about prospects by name and kind of speculate as to what the Warriors will do with this number two pick that we have going into this 2020 draft. But, you know, not to do the easy thing and talk about great memories from past drafts, but it is informative about where things are going to kind of look at the most recent past. And I guess one of the foundational building blocks was 2012, as Eric joins us. And your memories of 2012 and what that meant, because the other day when Kent was on, I think he mentioned that as being his favorite draft when you look at what came from it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. You know, just thinking about the championships that the Warriors have won in their history, and you can point to one draft class where you have three guys that were all major contributors on a championship winning team. I think to me that just stands out the most in recent memory for sure. 2015, you had the emergence of Draymond and then Harrison Barnes in the starting lineup, and then Azeli did a great job. I remember in the finals he had a putback dunk, like, and one in like a crucial game that was really huge. And I just thought that all three of those guys were solid contributors, not only for 2015, but also for the historic 2016 season as well. So I think when you can point to one draft, you know, for this dynasty where you had one draft, like three guys that were solid contributors, it's pretty tough to beat that one. And also just because the 2015 season will always be probably my favorite moment as a Warrior fan. So just very grateful for that team and for this draft class.
You know, it's funny. I feel you know, a great sadness, Eric, when I think of Festus Ezeli injuring his knee and what it has taken for him to try to get back into professional basketball. Super nice person. Really, really cool guy and a bright player who was just so physically gifted in the times that he was playing for the Warriors. That one dunk he had in the NBA Finals in 2015 in Cleveland, where he was fouled but finished the and one with a dunk that most people would have ended up on the floor. Like, you could see the athleticism on display. And, you know, that a disappointing part in the middle of Harrison, one of the greatest people I've ever met within the world of basketball. And we've had some great ones with the team, Stephen, Clay, et cetera, Draymond Green as well. But Harrison, a super person with that seventh pick, and Draymond, you know, the defensive player of the year, the Hall of Famer to be, legend, one of the greatest defensive players of his era. And not only that, just the winner at all levels. That draft, yes, no doubt. And indulge me for just a second, guys, because I want to cue up something that set up that 2012 draft. And Eric, thank you so much for joining us and bringing in your perspective on that. As we think back to the NBA draft lottery, it was May of 2012 in New York, and the scene was this. There had been a coin flip at some point that the Warriors had won after the end of the 2011 campaign that allowed this draft lottery to hold this weight that if the Warriors kept seven or above, they would be able to make that lottery pick. But if for some reason a team jumped them, they would not have kept the pick because of trades that had been consummated, and that, you know, the draft pick would have been sent over. And in this case, keeping that seventh pick was so key. So some good luck charms came into place. And I want to take you back to 2012 in New York City, the NBA draft lottery. A quick conversation that we had with Warriors owner Joe Lacob, talking about a good luck charm that co-owner Peter Guber brought as Bob Myers was there, and everyone was centered around keeping that pick, which became Harrison. And we'll talk about how the dominoes unfolded in just a second. But here's Joe Lacob on that night in May of 2012 at the NBA draft lottery.
Last year, you're up on the stage during the TV presentation. This year, you will be behind the scenes where the actual lottery is
done. Tell me, what are you thinking right now? What are the nerves?
Well, I'm hoping this is the last time we ever have to do this. And I would like an opportunity to see how it works behind the scenes. Everyone seems to be wondering how it does work, and I'd like to see it.
Did you bring any sort of lucky charm for this part of the process?
My partner, Peter Gruber, has the ultimate lucky charm, and he's brought it with him. I don't know if it's been in the press yet or not. Has it? I believe it has, which is a very interesting tooth from a great white shark. And only three of them from this great white shark exist. It's like 2 pounds. And I believe he's used this as a lucky charm before. He rubs the tooth. We're all going to rub the tooth. We're going to do our best to see if this works tonight. Well, our hope is that we move up, obviously. Certainly, we'd be happy with moving or staying at 7. That would also be a good thing for us. And, of course, there's one bad endpoint or something that happens here that would not be good, and that is, of course, if we move down, and that is if someone moved over us. But we don't think that's going to happen. We're going to stay positive here, and hopefully good things happen tonight.
So the Warriors held the 7th pick, which became Harrison Barnes. Now, just say that had not happened. The question then becomes, how does the draft unfold, and is Draymond Green available in the second round? Is Draymond Green taken by the Warriors in the second round if needs were someplace else? Just the way that it unfolded, with Harrison being selected with the 7th pick, then Festus at the end of the first round, and then how everything unfolded for Draymond Green to be a Warrior, soon an All-Star, a huge impact player, again, Defensive Player of the Year, future Hall of Famer, and really one of the most intense players of his era. What would the Warriors have been if it had not unfolded that way? And I always think back to 2012, that draft lottery. And let's not say the magic tooth that was from the great white shark that was rubbed, but let's just say all of the good positive energy that led to the Warriors forming how they did. And it just always strikes me that night in May of 2012 in New York City as being a formative time. Will, concepts for that 2012 draft, that was a key one for the Warriors. And it is weird how things can unfold different ways, but what do you remember about that time period and how you saw it unfolding from not just the draft lottery, but into the night that was the draft?
Well, I remember a couple of things about that draft. And what the first one is actually from a couple of years later. I was at the Sloan MIT Sports Analytics Conference. And there was a panel with Mike Zarin and Danny Ainge. Yeah. And they were talking about how at number 21, they selected Jared Sullinger, and we're kind of getting some flack about not having taken Draymond, who, of course, went in the second round, 35. And they said that they had three players listed at the top of their board for 21, Jared Sullinger, Fab Mello, who they selected with the 22nd pick, and of course Draymond was their third option. So kind of a funny thing there, and you know, retrospectively it would have been wild to think about how good the Celtics may have been with Draymond. In terms of Harrison, I think one of the more underrated players in not only in that draft class but just as a contributor to the success of the Warriors during their 4 or 5 year run where they were making the finals, and really being a key component in developing that small ball lineup where Draymond moved up to the 5 famously. People kind of remember that as the swinging point, but I really think Harrison Barnes being able to move up to the power forward spot, guard some of the more traditional power forwards in the league, which were still relevant back then, was really important in the Warriors' success and kind of allowed them to be able to function with that quote-unquote death lineup that ended up winning them the championship that year.
You know, it's so funny. We were talking about Anthony Randolph just a moment ago and your point about Harrison moving to 4 and being so athletic and fleet. I remember the playoff series against the Nuggets, the game in Denver where Harrison ran the baseline and had a reverse dunk on Anthony Randolph, then a Denver Nugget, and that was like, okay, this guy's athleticism will certainly come into play and be helpful, as the Warriors certainly benefited from, as not just the 2013 time period with the playoffs, but future playoffs down the line, including up and through an NBA championship with Harrison on the team. And let's kick it deeper into the 80s. And Brian joins us because in the discussion board, Brian, you pointed out something that I was hoping somebody would. We'll talk Run TMC, but Run TMC was born over a period of time. First 1985, when the first part of Run TMC, the C, Chris, was selected by the Warriors with the 7th overall pick out of St. John's. But then, as you're pointing out, it was 88, Mitch Richmond out of Kansas State with the 5th overall pick by the Warriors, and then Tim Hardaway Sr. out of UTEP, the UTEP two-step coming in with the killer crossover. I think 88, 89 was kind of a magical time to set up Run TMC as we know it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on your program. Really appreciate it. I just remember those years. I was born in actually 87, so I had the chance to really go back and watch those players like as I grew up, like older film, and it was really fun. It was kind of crazy, though, just the fact that I'm not really sure how often it's talked about, just the fact that the Warriors did make that trade in 91, then they broke up that trio. I guess from my understanding is they thought, you know, they wanted to have a big man, and maybe they thought, maybe in between Mitch, Chris, and Tim, it was Tim Hardaway Sr. It was too much shooting. But do you feel like the trade for Billy Owens to Sacramento gets talked enough in Warriors history?
Not no. it's ancient history. But I mean, I was looking back at these drafts and thinking, like, at what point do we do this cutoff for folks? Because obviously, locker room and a lot of social media is going to trend to a younger generation of folks. I mean, we could go back to a fun trivia question you could ask: who was the top overall draft pick for the Warriors out of Davidson? And most people would think it was Steph, but it was actually with the number one pick overall in the same year that Rick Barry was selected. The Warriors taking Fred Hetzel out of Davidson. So, I mean, like, you could keep going so far back in time that people just wouldn't remember the history of it. That being 1965, by the way. But, yeah, I mean, you're talking about stuff that was in the late 80s and certainly key to things. I mean, like, and most people, I will say, outside of the Run TMC portion of things, most people think of Mitch, and we went into the Hall of Fame, like, you know, you kind of almost think of him in many ways more of a member of the Kings than of the Warriors. We, of course, love to honor his time, and it wasn't that long really with the Warriors, and, you know, like, again, a couple of years, just like Gilbert Arenas, as we were talking about earlier. But that time period, that to me was basketball at its absolute most exciting in the NBA. Run TMC, Chris, Mitch, and Tim, we celebrate them to this day. And let's do one more thing from our Warriors soundboard, and that's a Warriors remix that we had on 95.7 The Game, where we went back to the 1985 draft that helped set things up for the Warriors as Run TMC would become Run TMC as Chris Mullin was selected. This, a look back to 1985, and goodness gracious, that's well over 30-something years ago. Can't believe it. It seems not exactly like yesterday, but it didn't seem like that long ago. Here's our listen back to when Chris Mullin was drafted.
For this Warriors remix, we go back to the 1985 NBA draft.
The Golden State Warriors select Chris Mullin from St. John's.
The Warriors general manager at the time was Al Attles.
The Warriors selected him as their number one draft choice. Mr. Muley asked me to attend the ceremonies in New York to represent the Warriors. But the main reason I was attending was to assure Mr. and Mrs. Mullin that the Bay Area would take good care of Chris Mullin.
I didn't know anything about Oakland. Didn't know, you know, never been here. I think it was in San Francisco once on a layover. So it was kind of like, okay, let's find out what this is all about.
He would go on to have his number 17 retired by the Warriors and be inducted into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame in 2011. With this Warriors remix, I'm Lawrence Scott.
So that extends our Warriors remix and other sound bites on our Warriors soundboard here on Locker Room as we wrap things up with a conversation that we'd had with Kent the other day. And Will, you know, kind of help us through this. As Locker Room has now launched, there's obviously a discussion about players who are looking at the tech world as something, not that they're just interested in, but they're making investments in and really trying to get deeper into. The other day, we had one of these remix segments where we were at Tech Crunch Disrupt in San Francisco, the time that Stephen Curry was a keynote speaker. But from your perspective, being there in the tech world with a startup that is bringing social media in the form of these rooms to sports fans, how have you seen players interacting in the past several years with their interests in tech and also actual action?
Well, I think you see it a lot just on social media. I think players are not only interacting more with their fans, and I think we can all agree that Kevin Durant is a great example of that. But, you know, being involved with different tech companies, whether it's as an investor or, you know, maybe starting their own media companies. So I think players are looking to express themselves as people and kind of expand beyond that stick to sports kind of banner or comment or whatever that may be. And so you see a lot of experimentation with that. As far as locker room goes, I think, you know, I come at this from more of a media background, working at Bleacher Report in my past and as a writer. You know, I think what's really exciting about locker room to me is the ability to bridge the gap between fans, players, and NBA front offices, where, you know, we had Kent on and David Fotoki, being able to have the fans kind of listen in and actually speak with those people is, I think, a really incredible experience that you wouldn't otherwise get. Obviously, as somebody who's covered the team, being able to connect with fans and understand what it is that they're looking for out of coverage so that I can, you know, maybe change what kind of questions I'm asking or approach whatever story I'm writing in a different light. So I think we're in a really interesting space right now as far as, like I said, bridging the gap between fans and players. And I'm really excited to see where that takes us in the media landscape moving forward.
Very well put. In shows ahead, we'll try to get Howard on to talk about his perspectives, too, from starting Locker Room as to how he sees players interacting with technology. We don't have to do that today. I'm really thankful, though, Will, that you spent the time with us to, one, talk about that, but also go back through memories of recent drafts and how, as you said, you're in the media space. You were covering these drafts. You remember what the ramifications were for different teams as certain picks unfolded as it relates to the Warriors, and then how other teams were able to make selections because, you know, gosh, we started the show hearing Knicks fans in New York booing when Stephen Curry was selected. Well, that's their booing because they wished he went to the Knicks, and that was just one spot away from what could have happened. Again, Jordan Hill, I do believe, out of Arizona was the Knicks selection in that draft. And we'll do more of the tech talk as the shows unfold. And Monday, we're back 11 a.m. Is what we're scheduled for. Again, if Warriors draft preparations move the show like they did this past Monday, we will accommodate, of course. But Kirk Lacob to join us to talk about draft preparations. And then soon, you know, we're talking about really just a couple weeks away now, the actual NBA draft in 2020. So many things going on in the league right now as we gear for what would be the next season and how it's all to come together. But for real, I really do appreciate everybody being off stage, coming on stage to have a discussion with us about their favorite Warriors drafts and really some great memories, all the discussion there. And thank you also being so polite and helpful with you know, listing your thoughts in the discussion, letting us bring you up, and we will continue this, of course, and keep growing as the weeks unfold. And then I'm also looking most forward to when we get to the point that the draft pick has been made to playing out segments, hopefully getting that particular draft pick onto a room with us here. And we move past the phase of calling these Warriors draft rooms, and it's just Warriors talk on Locker Room. So great things to come. Will, thank you again for helping us hold down the ship today on a day that's obviously keeping everyone's attention in various places, but really fun to have a way to step away from that for a second and talk about great Warriors drafts and all that joined us. That was really cool. And Will, thank you again for doing so.
My pleasure, Lawrence. Yeah, anytime. And people in the offstage area, please continue to shoot us questions. We'll continue to have great guests on. And like I said, I'm really excited to see what we can do together moving forward.
Awesome stuff. With Will Gottlieb and all of our folks here joining us on the Warriors Draft Room, I'm Lawrence Scott. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you Monday, slated for 11 a.m. Another Warriors draft room here on Locker Room as we bring in Kirk Lacob. Until then, have yourself a very good rest of the week, and do stay safe. And thank you so much for participating with us here with the Golden State Warriors on Locker Room.